This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us
Rick Foxley,
Jane Bolt,
and I'm Stuart Burks. Now, Rick, you came to Massey as one of the earliest students to study English in 1965.
Yes, Victoria University had opened an extension in Palmerston North in about 62, 63.
Okay.
And then Massey took it over, the one building on the Hukawhiti campus, in about 64, and we came in 65.
Okay.
When there were 500 students in Massey all up.
Yeah, and most of those would have been the ag students,
ag,
were they?
Ag, food technology, yeah.
So were you sticking out like a sore thumb, one of the few?
No, we were fine.
Had they broadened out a lot by 65?
I think so. I've always said when I started, the agricultural students, most of the male had to wear ties to lectures. By the time I was a year or two other, didn't have to wear anything at all.
Yeah, but, they're all in gumboots and things.
Because the world changed so dramatically.
Oh, yes, of course, because that was 68 was all the big student protests in Paris and London. Did that affect New Zealand, do you know?
Not that I'm aware of.
No, you didn't? No protests at Massey?
No.
Okay, so how many English students were there?
I don't know, a couple of hundred? That's a guess.
Oh, yes.
That's a guess.
Okay.
But I know we had the English professor as our tutor in our first year.
Yeah.
There wouldn't be many universities in the world where you'd get that.
No. I found it interesting, the difference between England and New Zealand. Their most experienced people would be teaching the first year courses.
Okay.
And the younger ones would be doing specialists later ones. Here, it seemed to be the first year course no one wants, so you give it to the youngest staff member coming in.
But our lecturers, I mean, there was geography, history, French, whatever, bit of German, English, but there were only two or three lecturers in each department.
Yes, at that stage, because they would have only been there two or three years, probably.
John Darwick, of course, was a very famous Manawatu man. He was the drama man, and he was around Palmerston North for many, many years.
Okay.
And very, very good on drama.
Yeah. Okay. So what made you choose Massey at that stage?
I was going to go to Victoria, coming down from Gisborne, and then an opportunity came to have a look here, and we thought, let's have a look at it. And as good fortune would have it, my wife, to be, was going to go to Teachers College here, and she came
down. Oh, I knew I'd known.
We didn't know each other. Decided to come to Massey, so we both ended up at Massey in our first year doing basically the same course.
Okay.
She came from New Plymouth.
Was she there at the same time?
Yeah.
Exactly the same time?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Now, but also, you came from a farming background, but decided to study English at university.
Yes, I grew up on a 500-acre sheep farm just south of Gisborne, right where Captain Cook discovered New Zealand.
Yeah.
And my father, who had flown through the war in the Fleet Air Arm, D-Day, the whole works without harming a hair in his head, used to fly a tiger moth for fun, plan tramps in the Urawaras with a mate.
Yeah.
And in 1957, they were flying down the east coast, and as they went over Whanganui Ra, where Whale Rider was filmed many years later, he had a fuel blockage, and the plane came down in the sea, and he drowned swimming ashore.
Oh, dear.
His neighbour got ashore.
Yeah.
Dad didn't, he was 37. And so mother, of 34, was left with three boys and 500 acres. I was the oldest. And from that point on, I didn't want to farm.
Yes.
No logical reason for that, but...
Yeah. So you were 11 years old then? Wow. Yeah. So you had a whole... So you and your brothers helped run the farm?
We got a manager.
Yeah.
But I was away at boarding school, and we all went through prep school. Then I went up to King's College in Auckland for three years. As death's duties kicked in, mm-hmm. I came back to Gisborne Boys High, which was actually the best thing possible. I didn't fit King's terribly well. And my young brothers went straight to Gisborne Boys High.
So, okay. Now, that's it. So, is it growing up in Gisborne, there's a different sort of culture, you mean?
Well, it was. I mean, very much the farming community, the kids all went off to boarding school.
Yeah.
And in the holidays, they organised dances, but they were all that group of families who had been there for two or three generations.
Yeah,
I mean, our primary school was 70% Maori, and when I went off at 10, yeah. I left my young brother in the care of my closest friend, who was Chinese Maori. You know, the primary school was brilliant and totally comfortably integrated.
Okay.
You know, there was no issue.
Now, there's so many different areas to look into.
Yeah.
So 70% Maori. Was Maori culture very dominant then?
Not in the way it is now. Not at all. I mean, in those days, I think you got into trouble if you spoke Maori sort of thing. I don't really recall.
Yeah.
But interesting, my younger brother's daughter has sent her kids to that same Muruwai school, and they were the only Pākehā kids in the school.
Yeah.
And she was actually leading the kapa haka, the oldest daughter at 11.
Did you feel then, I mean, one thing that you mentioned, the language, I've just been reading some elderly people in this area, Maori, who were saying it was actually their parents or older relatives saying the future's English, don't speak Maori.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It wasn't necessarily imposed on them as much as there was the feeling English was the
English
language
was
to go
to. And there was certainly no Maori taught in the school.
Yeah. But the values, and I mean, now there's a lot of emphasis on Maori ways of doing things. Was there any awareness of that? Did you see
a
cultural difference?
It was a long time ago, 70 years ago. Yeah. Not that I'm conscious of.
Yeah.
We were all just kids at school together.
Did you go to you had friends who were Maori at school? Did you go to their homes?
No, not a lot. I think there was that, there was a social division. There were actually three. There were the farm owners, the farm workers, and then the Maori community.
And
all the kids went to the same school very comfortably. But socialising, no.
Well, so the Maori community was quite distinct with their own organisations?
Oh, they had their own pa.
So they were very focused on the pa and the Marae.
The shearing gang all came from there, and they went around all the farms.
Okay. So they weren't farm owners and farm labourers?
No, some worked on farms.
Okay.
Anzac Day was always a big deal. We all went down to Muruwai and there was a hangi and the service.
Yeah.
That was very special. And it still is.
Yeah, it's great.
It still is. My brothers still go.
Yeah. Okay. So the idea was there was sort of somewhat distinct communities, but you all got on well together.
I'm not aware of any antagonism or any unfairness or the sort of stuff that's cropped up in recent years, and quite legitimately, I think. People all just live their lives. I mean, we were wealthier than they were, but...
Yeah.
We weren't wealthy, but we were wealthier than they were. But it worked. It was pretty settled in the 50s. You'd say that.
No, so we didn't have any
Maori. If you know Witty Humara's book, Bully Basher, which is a fabulous book about two sharing gangs in Gisborne, Bully Basher being a Romani word for King of the Gypsies. It is he also wrote Well Rider.
Yes.
A magnificent book, and the sort of life he describes is very much set in that era.
So worth looking at.
Yeah.
Okay, so to get back, your father died in drowned after a plane crash.
Yeah.
You decided you didn't want to go farming after that.
No.
And somehow English seemed to be the thing.
I was going to, my best friend at Heriworth Prep School was the son of the vicar of Waipawa. And from meeting that father, I wanted to be a vicar. Without having the remotest idea of what that might mean.
Yeah.
But I was impressed with him.
A male role model.
Something like that,
Okay.
And I wanted to be a vicar. And I went off to King's College, where sport was basically the reigning deity, which didn't do me because I was useless at sport. And I found solace in the chapel, even going sort of cleaning the organ loft and things like that. And we had a dormitory prefect who was the senior boy to do with chapel stuff. They called him a senior sacristan. And he would take a group of us round to the chapel every night after lights out in our third form, against fierce opposition from the matron who had been there for 35 years. And we'd line up along the altar rail and pray our little hearts out. Totally sincere. And without really sort of knowing what we were about. And we'd go and talk to the padre. But in the fifth form, I said, stuff the whole lot of it.
Yeah.
And my language deteriorated rapidly. And but I had that sort of background.
Yeah.
Then
you found Shakespeare in the bawdy language.
Something like that. Something like that. Yes, yeah. And came back and had two very happy years at Gisborne Boys High.
So as someone who wasn't interested in sport in a very sporty school, was that difficult?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah. In what way?
I was useless at it.
Were you picked on?
Not particularly, but I was somewhat of a loner.
Okay.
It wasn't a particularly happy...
Yeah. Was there a group of non-sporty boys?
My closest friend was a day boy, and we are friends to this day. He lives on the Isle of Man. We are close friends still, all these years later.
Yeah.
But no one else really. He's about the only friend from those days.
Okay, and then you went to
Gisborne Boys High. Mother had taken up tramping. My father had always said tramping, which he loved, with whole Euroweras in his back door.
Yes, yeah.
The bush is no place for a woman. But after he died, Mother took up tramping and excelled in it.
Yes.
And so we had, in my 2 years of high school, we did the Euroweras.
Yeah.
Very thoroughly.
Late White Caramel.
All of that, absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
And
so now, Late White Caramel, now that's one of the walks to do.
Yes.
And I think it's been improved a lot. So what was it like in your day?
Well, it was pretty basic.
Yeah.
I remember once we were up at Lake Waikareiti, which is little sea of rippling waters, and we had an Australian guy in the tramping club. And what he could do was tickle trout.
Oh, yeah.
He was about 5 years older than us, and he was the coolest dude in town. And there was this little sort of stream, and he had just reached under. The warden's house was just down here, and he'd reach underneath and just tickle his trout out. That's one of my abiding memories of that.
Yeah.
Then we'd all have to stuff these things in inside our
parkas. So tickling trout, it just... Touch them very gently until he could grab hold of them and pull them out of the water.
Out they came.
Yeah.
And totally illegal. And we all had to go past the warden's house with these things inside our park jackets. But we did some pretty impressive climbing and walking through there at various times. Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't really tramped since, but they were special.
Yeah. All right. So, and the now, but that area also with the local Maori, there's they're quite. No, it was just you just go and
you just go and do it. Yeah, yeah. There was none of what we've seen in more recent years.
Yes. Okay.
We went into Ruatahuna once, which was right in the real back of beyond, and they were surprised to see us. I think, but no,
it's all good.
No, quite well.
No problems. Yeah, no problems at all.
Okay. So you enjoyed Gisborne Boys High, and so what sort of subjects did you do that?
English history, geography, French, I guess.
Okay, so in history, what did you cover?
European history. We knew New Zealand history, but not, you know, they're just redoing the curriculum now to have a real focus.
Yeah.
But we know we did European history, ancient history.
So when you say you knew New Zealand history, I hear now people say, well, we were taught a lot in the past. Now they're saying it hasn't been covered.
Yeah, no, there wasn't the guilt thing over the Maori Wars or the New Zealand Wars. All that sort of, that didn't exist in those days.
Yes.
You're really making me think here.
Okay.
That didn't exist in those days. We learnt about the King movement and all of that sort of thing. But we probably focused far more on European, British history, Roman history, all of that.
Yeah, but you did get the a context of things evolving over time and institutions evolving over time.
It was very, and I think very valuable.
I mean, yeah, it's important.
Now the focus is far more social studies, where they take an issue out of context and just look at it rather than the.
No, sort of good.
Okay. Yeah. And so, were there teachers that particularly inspired you to go into English, or you just enjoyed it?
Yes. We're a bookish family. Every fox in the house is full of books. And at that stage, I didn't know quite what I wanted to do. And so we came down here to do English and French and history.
And that was all fully funded by the government?
Oh, yes. You worked during the summer.
How many years did they...
Well, it was a three-year course. I missed the final unit and so came back into the part-time final year.
And it was online business. You couldn't do it online.
Oh, computers have no
invented. No, no computers. They were just developing the first basic computer languages.
So it was very good.
Now, student life, though, a lot of that has got things like process and so on.
That was
all there by then?
Yes, it certainly was. I never got totally involved in that. I had a friend who was the Massey, what do they call the king and queen or something, the boss. Very good friend, Charles Waldegrave. And he was a good friend.
Charles Waldegrave?
Yeah.
He was at Massey?
Oh, so. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You know Charles, eh?
No. Well, I know of him.
No, he went right through with us.
Okay.
And we saw a lot of him. You see, he was slightly terrifying because he was drunk three times a week. He came out of Christ College and left.
Do we have to cut this?
No. Because there's a redeeming feature to that shortly. But he was actually brilliant. But from our perspective, he was somewhat a wild and woolly man or youth.
Yes.
And
educated.
Yeah, but I was in a hostel, in an old hostel, and we all got on fine. I cycled back and forth to the Hokafitu
campus. It was all on the Hokafitu campus?
Our lectures were, yes.
Okay, so was there much development on the current Massey campus?
No, it hadn't started.
Okay.
That all came in the 70s, I think.
Okay.
You had the old refectory, old hostel, pink hostel. We hadn't got the rotary courts or anything like that. You had the Colombo Hall.
And then
the girls were up at up across the road and up above the vet faculty up the hill there. They were all up there.
So were there many female students at university?
Certainly in the arts faculty, I'm not sure there are too many doing agriculture. There were some doing agriculture or vet horticulture. Food technology. But it certainly wasn't anything like a 50-50 ratio. I'm not sure what the ratio was in the arts faculty, but it would have been nearer
It was by 1986 that there was as many female as male students at university. Now it's about 60% female, 40% male, probably even fewer males. A big change.
The big change for me happened in September of that year. I'm very good at acquainting with people. I'm not necessarily good at, or was not necessarily good at, deep, substantial friendships. And sometimes in my life I'd find myself into something, and then 6 months later I'd be kind of on my own. I sort of started experiencing that happening a bit down there at Massey. And I'd be going to All Saints Church, just going. And this sort of got to me, and I went and saw the curate, a guy called Ray Muller, and said, "Look, this is driving me nuts, you know, I'm feeling on the edge of things." And he said to me, "Have you ever asked Jesus Christ into your life?" And I hadn't even heard of such a concept. And he just explained what that meant, that you could ask God to come into your life. And I said, "Yes, please," on the spot, and I jumped at it. And that totally transformed my life from that day till this. It made an enormous difference to my life. Suddenly, I wasn't alone.
In terms of people as well?
That came. There was a beginning happening at that time in Massey. There was the beginning of what could be called a Christian revival. And Ray was fundamental to that. And by the beginning of 66, that was really getting going. And the aforesaid Charles Waldegrave was thoroughly converted.
Oh, yeah.
And we ended up having prayer meetings in his parents' home every Friday night with 60, 70 students. And they went for years. And so we got an incredibly solid grounding in faith and what that meant. And it was life-changing.
And now, was that for a small group or a large proportion of students?
Well, at one of our house parties we had up at Total Reserve, we had 10% of the university population at it in those days. Because the population was small. But it made a significant impact on campus. And all sorts of students from all sorts of different faculties were involved.
Well, that's interesting, because in Britain, my experience was quite the opposite, really. I think religion became far less, and it's only in recent years there's been a revival. But you feel there was a big revival then?
It was huge.
It sort of died out, or went through with that generation, it's coming back?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question, the whole history of revival. But there's a thing called the charismatic renewal.
Mm-hmm.
Where charisma means gifts.
Yeah.
And in the Bible it talks about the gifts of the Holy Spirit, like prophecy and healing and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And these things started to come back into people's experience, whereas much of, if you like, evangelical Christianity had said, no, they were for Bible times, not for today.
Yeah.
And so there was a degree of confusion, some opposition. Brethren Baptist people generally said, no, those things were for back then. Yeah. And suddenly here were all these noisy Anglicans, Presbyterians, Methodists, all the churches that the more evangelical ones were rather tired and ancient and not really too Christian. Suddenly they were all leaping up and down, praising God and bringing other people to faith and all sorts of things. I mean, it was a very exciting time.
Yeah.
And ups and downs.
Do you feel that's recurred then with younger people?
It kept going. We went off to England in 75 and came back in 91.
Well, hang on. So, was it very different in England?
Oh, yes, it was. But somewhere during that period, I don't know what they did with the revival, but it faded.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it went right across the country. It was huge. And little places like Tyhappy and Mungaweka and St. Paul's Anglo-Catholic Church on Simon Street in Auckland.
Yeah.
Whole Anglo-Catholic, and the priest was Richard Preble. Oh, you've got Preble, Tom Preble at Massey.
Yeah.
Their father,
Archdeacon
Ken Preble.
Okay.
Delightfully, a little wispy beard and full Anglo-Catholic and incense. And you go in there and you swing his instrument. Then you say, let's sing a chorus.
Yeah.
And he blended Anglo-Catholicism, evangelicalism, and the charismatic side in the most extraordinary way. Ray Muller is just finishing a book now about what happened at Massey. And hopefully it's going to be out in the next little while.
Okay.
So it was an extraordinary time. And Penny and I met very early on in that.
Yeah.
And so did all our courtship
within
that environment.
Okay.
Which was great fun.
Okay, so you've kept close links with the church since then?
Oh, yes. It's been the centre of our life.
Okay. So you focused, so beyond the studies then at Massey, was there much in the way of student life?
Well, because we were a big group involved in this whole Christian thing, that was where we did our socialising.
That was mainly university or
some
town
teachers'
and gown
college,
mixed?
Some nurses from the Nurses Christian Fellowship, some Teachers College Christian Fellowship, but it was mostly from the university. And and many of those people we're still in touch with.
Yeah, because I was going to say, so then if you've got a strong group at university that involves so much of your life, and then you leave university. Yeah. Were you leaving a lot of that?
I was we were to finish our degree at the end of 67, get married, and then go up to St. John's Theological College in Auckland for me to train to be a vicar. But our wedding party was fairly depressing. I'd missed a thing. Our bridesmaid had missed a degree, a paper. I think my best man had missed a paper. and this was like 3 weeks after it was finished. So we ended up staying here in Palmerston North. And Penny was on a postgraduate teachers' college thing where she had to do a 1 year's teachers' college course afterwards for her bond. I went to work at Bennett's Bookshop part-time, helping out in the university rush department.
Yes. Yes.
And then the opportunity came up to move downstairs to the Christian books, called Bennett's Bookshop.
Now, Bennett's was a big institution for a long time.
Oh, yes.
Until it was eventually taken over by Whitcomb.
Yes. It was founded by G.H. Bennett, who at 17 was travelling for the Bible Society, and his territory was the North Island and the top of the South Island in the 1870s, 80s. Mm-hmm. And you think you're doing that on a horse and perhaps a bit by train?
Yeah.
And he eventually settled here and put a bookshop here, and his sons, Mr. Gordon and Mr. Harold, ran the shop. Okay. And they were both elderly gentlemen when we came in, and Mr. Harold kept an eye on the stationery side, and his life revolved around that RSA, and Mr. Gordon kept an eye on the book side, and his life revolved around St. Paul's Methodist Church.
Ah,
and they were delightful, especially Mr. Gordon. And he had remarried, both of them had been widowed, and he had remarried, and their wedding day date was the same as ours, so we were quite close.
This is part one of four. Listen next week for part two.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.